Reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 11, Chapter 8. The chapter is entitled The Story of Pingala. And today we're on text 16. Saduko parjitaya vitaya.
Saduko parjitaya
vitaya. Asasanam grihashisha. Madhu Hevagato Bhunkte Atirvagrihamedinam Sudukho Parijitaya Vittaya
Sudukho Parijitaya
Vittaya Shashanam Vihashisa Madhu Hevagato Bhunkte Satirvagrihamedinam Sudukho
Parijitaya
Shashanam Grihasisa
Madhu
Hevagato
Bhukte
Satirvagrihamedinam. Who's chant?
Sudukho
parijitaya vitaya
Asasanam
grihashisa
Madhu
Hevagato Bhunkte
Yatirvagrihamedinam
Sudukho parijitaya vitaya Asasanam grihashisa Madhu Hevagato Bhunkte Sudukha.
Sudukha.
A great struggle.
Great struggle.
Uparajitai.
That which is acquired.
Vitai.
Material
opulence.
Shashanam.
Shashanam.
Of those fervently desiring.
Griha.
Related to domestic enjoyment.
Ashisha.
Blessings.
Madhuha.
The person who steals honey from the bees.
Eva.
Light.
Agata,
first before others.
Bhunkte,
enjoys.
Yati,
a saintly mendicant.
Vai,
certainly.
Grihamedinam, of those dedicated to material family life. Translation and purport by the followers of His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada. Just as a hunter takes away the honey laboriously produced by the honeybee. Similarly, saintly mendicants such as brahmacharis and sannyasis are entitled to enjoy the property painstakingly accumulated by householders dedicated to family enjoyment. Purport. The scriptures state, saintly mendicants in the sannyas order of life and brahmacharis have first right to enjoy the sumptuous foodstuffs produced by the householders. If the householders enjoy such foodstuffs without first offering them in charity to the mendicants, such neglectful householders must undergo the lunar fast called Chandrayanam. In family life, one must overcome the natural tendency towards selfishness by giving abundant charity. Modern society foolishly does not observe such Vedic injunctions, and as a result, the world has become overrun by envious griha-medis, or persons wholly and solely dedicated to personal gratification and family life. Therefore, the whole world is seized in an uncontrollable spasm of violence and suffering. If one wants to live peacefully, one must follow the Vedic injunctions regulating family life. Although the householders work very hard to accumulate money, the saintly sannyasis and brahmacharis have the right to first enjoy the fruits of such labor. The conclusion is that one should give first priority to spiritual advancement and Krishna consciousness and thus perfect one's life. Then, even without personal endeavor, one will be supplied all of one's necessities by the mercy of the personality of Godhead. Sudukho parjitaya vitaya ashashanam grahashisha madhu heva gato bukte etir vaigrihamedinam. Just as a hunter takes away the honey laboriously produced by the honeybees, similarly, saintly mendicants such as brahmacharis and sannyasis are entitled to enjoy the property painstakingly accumulated by householders dedicated to family enjoyment. Om Gyanatam Arandasya Gananjana Shilakaya Chakshur Umaitam Gena Tashmai Shri Guru Vayamaha. So we're on a new guru with Avadhuta Brahmana and his instructions to King Yadu as conveyed to us by Krishna and his speaking to Uddhava. So on Friday's class, which was the preceding Bhagavatam class, there's quite a different slant on this honey thief. This is the one that Malati gave the class, but she was speaking in the purport described by hook or by crook, and this is in the negative connotation of the word, you know, all kinds of means to get the money that people work so hard to accumulate, money and possessions. So we've got the same honeybees, but a different kind of mood with the honey thief. And these are the brahmacharis and sannyasis. So it's quite a different paradigm that we're dealing with today, because this is actually a blessing. There's tremendous scope for people I'm gonna give a brahmachari class today. But there's one, actually, matter of fact, when I was a brahmachari way back when, I was doing traveling sankirtan, and I was based in the Philly temple. And there was one sannyasi, he'd just taken sannyas, and now he's become GBC guru, quite established leading sannyasi. And us brahmacharis, as we came back to the temple, and he would regularly be giving class, that every single class I'm not mentioning names. I don't want to incur any offense. It's kind of like, it's not really critical. It was just real poignant and left a deep impression. But every single class, he would quote one verse from the teachings of Lord Vishabhdev to his sons. And it just was a regular thing. At some point in the class, he would quote this. And the brahmacharis and my traveling party, we would kind of look at each other and start grinning. But I tell you, there's an awful lot to it. Pumsastriya mituni bhavamitam taror, oh Krishna, taror mito ridaya grantya mahu, atogriha shetra sutapta vitar, janasya moho yamaham amiti. So the attraction between male and female forms the basic principle of material existence, material life. On the basis of this misconception, there's a knot, there's a ridaya granti, this attraction between male and female. And on the basis of this attraction, one becomes attached to his property, his home, his family, his children, relatives. In this way, he increases life's illusion, and he thinks in terms of I and mine. So, this is a pretty powerful binding factor. There was in the early, in the 26th Second Avenue Leela, there's one pastime where Brahmananda was still attending university, and he would come and speak with Prabhupada about what he's going through. He had an English literature professor that kept making a point when they would analyze different sections of their course material, different prose or poetry. And this English professor would always see that there was a sex motive behind everything. And Brahmananda complained to Prabhupada, he doesn't really, you know, he doesn't see things with spiritual vision. And then Prabhupada said, actually, he's right. That's, you know, that's the driving force in the material world, sex desire. And of course, Sigmund Freud made a big deal out of that whole thing. But also, Shastra does as well. So, the last point in the purport to this verse of Lord Vishabhdev's teaching his sons, said, most people are bound by the knots of marital relations, and consequently they forget their relationship with Krishna. Okay, so, I mean, it goes on and on. And there's another really famous verse that, it's a kind of a brahmachari shloka. This is, Lord Nrisimhadev in his prayer, Prahlad Maharaj in his prayers to Nrisimhadev. Yan maitu nadi grihamedi sukham hitucham, kanduya nena karayori vaduka dukam, chapyanti neha kripana bahuduka bhaja, kanduti van manasitam vishahita dira. So, there's an interesting analogy that starts out the translation. Sex life is compared to the rubbing of two hands together to relieve an itch. So, Grihamedi, so-called grahasas who have no spiritual knowledge, think that this itching sensation is the greatest platform of happiness. Although actually, it's a source of distress. So, the kripanas, those fools who are just the opposite, this is the translation, I'm not making any commentary on it, but the kripanas, the fools who are just the opposite of the brahmanas, think that this itching sensation is the highest platform of happiness. So those who are sober, and they're not satisfied by just going and keep going more and more repeated sense gratification, those who are dira, who tolerate this itching, they're not subjected to the suffering of the fools and rascals. So, we're starting out in kind of a really sober and grim way with this class, but this is kind of the reality that this is a grahastha community that we all have to face. In one room conversation, Prabhupada described Maida, this is in Griha Maidi, that word is the pole that the bull is strapped to, and he goes round and round. I guess what does the bull do? He's thrashing grain, I think, right? So he goes round and round and round all day long in a circle. So this Maida is, that's what, you know, is the motivating force for one in material consciousness. So this goes quite deep in all of us, right, to the why we came to the material world in the first place. Prabhupada often quotes Gita 7:27 in that regard. Icha dvesha samutvena dvandro mohena bharata sarvabhutani samhoham sargayanti parantapa. So the living entity is overcome by the dualities of desire and hate. He comes into this material world, and this desire and hate, they become primal motivating forces for him. There's a desire to kind of be the center of the universe, be the Supreme Lord, and a concomitant envy of Krishna. So these two things are there in the jiva. Comes in the material world, he's conditioned. So, but the real constitutional position of the living entity is to be Krishna's servant. So that's what we're all dealing with. This is what, you know, knowledge is all about, to understand it. So when one becomes separated from that understanding, from that knowledge, that's when he becomes controlled by the illusory energy. And he can't, Prabhupada says in the purport to 7:27, he can't understand Krishna. That's what's blocking us. You know, this lack of understanding of our subordination to the Supreme. Okay, so this is probably sounding more and more like a brahmachari class, but actually, there is a type of brahmacharya called upakurvan brahmachari, which is the kind of, there's the griha maidi, and he's so-called grahastha but had no spiritual knowledge. But the upakurvan brahmachari, he's continuous, his trajectory as a brahmachari prior to marriage. He strictly follows the order of the spiritual master, and he's also a brahmachari. So there's an encouragement, you know, through these, this section. It's not that it's only the mendicant that's benefiting from Krishna consciousness, or the brahmachari sannyasi, but also one who decides to function on the platform of upakurvan brahmachari and giving first priority to spiritual advancement. I'll back up a little bit. In the first sentence, there's a quote. Simply mendicants, saintly mendicants in the sannyas order of life and brahmacharis have first right to enjoy the sumptuous foodstuff produced by the householders. If the householders enjoy such foodstuff without first offering them charity to the mendicants, such neglectful householders must undergo the lunar fast called Chandrayanam. So this is actually from the Parashara Smriti, the first chapter, 51st verse. I did my research with the help of Google. And so this Chandrayanam is actually, there wasn't a complete explanation. I asked a couple of local scholars, and but I actually found that it seems that what happens is that you start to fast at the new moon, and you continue it by reducing the numbers of mouthfuls that you are chewing till you get down to the full moon, and you've only got one mouthful. So it seems quite austere, and it's not, has anybody ever heard of Chandrayanam before? I know Pran Govinda. He's one of the scholars I consulted, and he did an answer. I got an answer from the other one. But maybe you got some clarification on that. Is it a full month fast? 30 days.
It starts from the full moon.
Full moon, and then it goes to the new moon.
No,
the next full moon.
Full moon to full moon.
Full moon to full moon. So it's 30 days.
So you go after full moon, it's one more salt, and two. The second day, Dvitiya, Pratipad, Dvitiya, Tritiya, Chaturthi.
You gotta use the mic, Prabhu.
And then it goes all the way to the dark moon. Then it reduces again from 15 morsel to 1 morsel.
Okay, so can you say the first part up until the dark moon?
1 morsel. Well, we are talking about food more than the celebration, actually. Because we are concerned about our, I guess, stomach. So it starts from the full moon. The full moon, you take 1 morsel. And then next day it starts going down. The illumination of the moon goes down all the way to the dark moon. So your meal goes down from 1, I mean goes up to 1 to all the way to 15.
And then back down.
And then back to 14, 13, 12, like this, back to again 1. So it's a 1 month cycle. But there is a duty every day you have to do. You have to do fire sacrifice, you have to do pitritarpan, offering to the Lord and then forefathers. There's whole rituals.
So, this curbs the tendency to be selfish. That's the idea behind it. Whether it goes to the root cause of that selfishness deep in the heart, just like in the first part of the sixth canto, well, there's the fifth canto ends with a description of the hellish planets, and then Maharaj Pariksit, isn't there something that can be done so people don't have to suffer so intensely? And then Sukadev Goswami describes how there's these different austerities. This Chandrayanam seems like kind of in that category. But then Maharaj Pariksit, being a very intelligent disciple, says, but isn't it a little bit like the bathing of an elephant? You know, I mean, he goes, he takes a bath, but then he gets his trunk and sprays dust all over him. So does it really eradicate it? You know, and that Sukadev Goswami really appreciated such an intelligent disciple. So then the solution is Kechit Kevalaya Bhaktya Vasudeva Parayana Agamdun Vanti Katsnaya Niharam Iva Bhaskara. So simply by, you know, when one engages in devotional service, then material desire is completely uprooted. And just as, like, what's the analogy? Just like sun dissipates fog by its rays in the early morning hours. So it just takes it right up from the source and it doesn't come back. So, okay, so that's a big question mark. So Chandrayanam may not quite do that. And then I haven't really noticed anybody that's been doing that lately. As a matter of fact, it's not in folio. So that's why I went to Google. So it's not something that so much was emphasized by Prabhupada, but this was in the commentary by the Acharyas. So how is it that we get rid of these material desires? Because they block us. It's just like Bhaktivinoda Thakur and Harinam Chintamani compares the anarthas to the clouds and mist which block the sun of the holy name, so it doesn't really come through like it could. And so we don't get the benefit when we're chanting because of these, you know, clouds and mist. So what do we do about all this? How do we get rid of it? We understand, and so there, like in Madhurya Kandambini, there's 4 causes given for anarthas. Past sinful activities, past pious activities, surprisingly enough, might be Janmaishvaya Shruta Shribir. You might have like high birth, you know, great opulence, bodily beauty, high education. This can also be a form of anartha if we become prideful. We don't recognize these are borrowed plumes. So then also devotional service improperly performed, some defect in how we're performing it, like, what is it, Turanga Rangani, you know, this is the last stage of anishtita vajana kriya, and these are like, for instance, bhakti. Someone has bhakti, he attracts followers, he attracts wealth, he attracts recognition, so people can be affected by that and become puffed up. Another way that the sun of the holy name can be black. Then also aparads, that's the most serious one. So we got these coverings, and it comes about. We'll get some kind of desire, some type of attachment. We've all had experience that when these attachments or desires manifested, interestingly enough, there's some kind of an arrangement that's made so we can actually, oh man, that's right, you know, I gotta deal with this. So let me backtrack a little bit. When we surrender to the spiritual master at the time of initiation, we're freed from karma. So then how is it that sinful desires, pious activities, how does that impact us in terms of forming some kind of anartha, some kind of a desire? Where's that coming from? Sarvadhamma trikjagja mamikam sharanam gaja aham tvam sarvapapevyo moksha yashami masvichaha. So, we all know that sloka, you know, abandon all varieties of religion, just surrender unto me. Don't worry, I'll take care of all your sinful reactions. Not a problem for you anymore. But then, here we got these material desires. Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur says they're coming from past sinful activities. So, what's going on? What's the case? Prabhupada explains that actually, Krishna, he takes charge. He takes over. You know, we're not on the laws of karma. Krishna takes these sinful reactions, puts them under his control, and he uses them to help his devotee. Wait a minute. Wow. That's a pretty amazing understanding. But it really fits in nicely with this verse that Prabhupada cites on page 91 in Nectar Devotion, which he says should be the guide for all devotees. And that's 10.14.8. Tatenu kampam shukshamikshamano bunjani vatma kritam vibhakam ridvag vaprabhirvidudan namaste jiveta yo mukti padesa dayabha. So one who tolerates all kinds of adverse conditions is understanding they're coming about as a result of his past misdeeds. He also understands that they're not sinful reactions once he's surrendered to Krishna. Actually, Krishna is arranging all this. But he goes on rendering service from the core of his heart, with body, mind, and words, offering obeisances to the Lord. And then that person becomes Siddhayabhak. He becomes eligible to go back to the spiritual world, eligible to enter into pure devotional service. So that's a very key factor. So when these arrangements are made, when there's these things that we're not so comfortable about, when the dirty things in our heart come to the surface, Krishna makes an arrangement for us to deal with it, kind of sever this attachment or reduce it. So then how we handle it, that's the key. And that's what that verse is all about, 10.14.8. If we handle it with gratitude, understanding this is Krishna's arrangement for my upliftment, for my coming closer to him, for giving me facility to take deeper shelter in him, then it's working. It will work for us. We'll actually reduce this covering that's kind of preventing us from realizing our relationship from Krishna, acting on that relationship, and feeling the transcendental bliss that's just natural for Krishna's devotee. So it's the anarthas that prevent us from getting there. And there are all these arrangements that Krishna makes. Now, one other really powerful process, this way of dealing with anarthas, we can see, okay, so we go in with our service, we see, we have a grateful attitude for Krishna, we're not saying, oh God, what'd you do this to me for? I'm your devotee. How can you do such a horrible thing? We don't have that kind of attitude. We're actually appreciative that he's making this elaborate arrangement, you know, through the material energy. All these little things kind of coming together to reveal to me where I'm at so that I can do something about it. And then in Bhagavad Thakur's Bhajan Rahasya, this is his commentary on Harinam Chintamani. he makes a point about anartha-nirvritti. Well, first of all, the first thing he says, I think this is in 252 of Bhajan Rahasya, that one who fails to try and free himself from anarthas in his lifetime meets only with misfortune and doesn't achieve the mercy of the holy name. Okay, so there has to be some awareness that this is something that I've got to do. I've got to do something about this crud that's in my heart. So what to do? Well, first of all, one thing that takes place when we're seeing that I've got an anartha, first thing is recognition. Like in educational circles, there's four levels of developing competence. The first level is unconscious incompetence. I'm not even aware that I got the anartha. You know, I've been walking around, I'm so puffed up that I don't even know it. Everybody else sees it, but I can't see it. Right? So then there's conscious incompetence. I'm puffed up, but I can't really change how I think about how great a person, what a gift I am to the Hare Krishna movement. I can't stop thinking like this somehow or other. So this is conscious incompetence. Okay, so then moving from conscious incompetence to conscious competence, there's a powerful tool first of all, when we become conscious of our incompetence, it is a little humbling, right? When someone points out to us very kindly, hey, you know, Prabhu, you got this like thing that's driving everybody nuts about your behavior, you know, your attitude. And it's kind of, oh, aha, and one of those aha moments. So then, so that starts kicking in. Okay, so then there's an interesting sequel to that verse in Bhajan Rahasya that I was citing, you know, how one who fails to try to free himself from anarthas in this lifetime meets only with misfortune and doesn't achieve the mercy of the holy name. The sequel to that, and one's own, one can't free himself from anarthas. Wait a minute, how am I supposed to try if I can't even do it on my own? But if one cries to the holy name for several days, this is how it's translated, several days seems a little inconceivable for us, but if we cry to the holy name for several days, then the holy name will remove all the anarthas from our heart. So then it's a question of how to cry, you know, get that quality of crying so that it really takes place. So we continue with our devotional service, we have a crying mood, and then bingo, it starts changing. You know, we start getting rid of these things that are just making our spiritual lives very difficult, these anarthas. So the process of devotional service, and it is a process, it's not just, and it involves many things. Okay, so there's also this mist of ignorance that prevents us from chanting effectively, coming to Shudanam. So, of course, we are hearing Bhagavatam, we're hearing from saintly people, but the whole process, Vasudeva Bhagavati Bhakti Yoga Prayojita Janaya Yasu Vairagyam Ganacham Ganachayara Haitukam. So, just by rendering service, one immediately acquires causeless knowledge and detachment from the world. So it awakens. But there's a lot of elements that create this awakening. You know, a lot of it has to do with our own attitudes. As Prabhupada says in the preface to Nectar of Instruction, advancement in Krishna consciousness is dependent upon the attitude of the practitioner. Okay, so there's an attitude, but also recognizing, you know, that this is something that's not good for me, and I really need to try hard, trying hard by taking shelter of the process of Krishna consciousness to get rid of it, and then I can actually achieve the satisfaction that everyone's looking for in life and get out of all this hellish conditions which are described in the purport, creating hell, you know, in my own thoughts and activities for others, and also helping others become free from this you know, painful circumstances, the painful circumstances in Kali Yuga. Hare Krishna. Okay, so I'll stop here and see if there's any chastisements, any comments, questions. Yes, Vaikuntha Prabhu. It's amazing that we got a microphone that works now.
Hare Krishna, thank you for a nice class. after describing the inadequacies of atonement for cleansing the heart, you posed the question, you know, so how does one make tangible advancement? Of course, you answered it very nicely as well. And just, it reminded me of sometimes on this day when they were describing about Jayananda's test times, I've heard a few times one devotee asked him, how does one make tangible spiritual advancement? And he said, I don't know, I'm too busy serving to think about it.
So that's my answer. What was his response?
Say it again. Someone had asked Jayananda Prabhu that question that he posed, how does one make tangible spiritual advancement? And his answer, as I've heard a few times, was, I don't know, I'm too busy serving to think about it. So I always thought that was a nice example.
Yeah. Are you there for me?
You mentioned the concept of crying to the Holy Name, and I heard a class some time ago by Japataka Maharaj, and he said, if you can't cry for the Holy Name, then you should cry to cry.
Right.
For the Holy Name. If you can't do that, then cry to cry, to cry for the Holy Name.
On some level, it should be from deep from the heart, you know, crying just like a child for its mother. I know that's what's in Japa Reform notebooks. That's written there. Going way back. Yes, Madame Prabhu?
I may have missed it, but you were talking about the unaware incompetence and then aware of incompetence. And then there was two more, but...
Okay, so after the... conscious incompetence comes conscious competence, and then comes unconscious competence. You don't have to think about it anymore because it's just become your way of life, as you've worked hard in it. I mean, this is on the material realm, but it's applicable within devotional service, understanding that we're not the doers, we're not the controllers. We have to surrender to Krishna, and Krishna releases us from these powerful modal forces that bind us. Go ahead.
So that's three. That's four. I missed one.
Okay, so unconscious incompetence, conscious incompetence, conscious competence, and unconscious competence. So we don't have to think about it. We're not even aware of it because we've rectified it. We're on the Bhava platform.
Okay, thank you.
The narratives have been Regatmaka.
I heard a nice analogy once regarding the point of our karma being taken by the spiritual master, but in the course of our devotional service, how it appears sometimes that karma is coming back, the reaction is coming back to us. Now, the analogy is that if you throw a ball against the wall, it'll come back with the same velocity in which you threw it. So that's action and reaction. After the spiritual master has taken your karma, then it's Krishna throwing the ball back at his sweet will as to how much and when.
Because, just like devotees have probably noticed, they go to an astrologer, they get an astrological projection of their future. And boy, it just kind of lines up. But hey, aren't I free from the laws of karma? How does astrology have anything to do with me? But because there's this trajectory of the subtle body, you know, through multiple lifetimes, and there's reformatory measures that the material energy takes. I mean, we're like in the prison house of the material world. Prabhupada uses that example. So there's reformation that takes place under the direction of the material energy. So that same, those same tendencies, even though we may be no longer under the laws of karma, those same mental tendencies and taints of desire are still there to some extent. So Krishna will use those sinful reactions for our upliftment. And they're tailored to our needs, much more so. Like with the, you know, before the spiritual master takes our karma, then it's just kind of an automated, impersonal process. You know, this material energy just doles it out, you know, the reactions. But here, as Ragatmaka was saying, it's just directly orchestrated and pointed to you by the Lord in a very powerful way, so that enlightenment can take place and freedom from the inertus. Pram Govinda Prabhu?
I was contemplating this for many, many months about this, that it's not a little subject matter. This has to be actually thoroughly understood with the many classes, that where Guru's involvement, spiritual master's involvement, their mercy involves how much and how much endeavor from within our conscious choice.
That's right.
Both has to be involved. It's not just mercy of Guru. Guru took the karma, now I'm done. That's not exactly like that.
Right.
There's verses in Chaitanya Charitamrita, and they explain this, that on the basis of that verse, apabdha phalam pavam kutam bijam phalam mukam kramena iva praliyati vishnu bhaktirat atmana. Bhaktivinoda Thakur give a commentary on that, that jnani jana yuge kariya jatane brahmere sakshat kare brahma sakshat kare apabdha karma sampurna jnanate hari. This prarabdha karma that we are born with, that is came with this body, it has to be experienced by the individual soul. It is a result of previous karma. It is something like a person who shot the arrow from his hand. The arrow is out of his hand. He really has no control on it. So from that angle, yes, when somebody comes to Krishna consciousness, by the mercy of Guru, it will destroy all the aparabdha karma, put kuta, bija, seed form, in future birth, everything will be finished. But this life, the body has to experience what he is destined to. Only there is one loophole Bhaktivinoda Thakur gives from Chaitanya Charitamrita. Kinto he naam tava spurti hale ekanti janero aro. Prarabdha aparabdha kichu nahi thaki vede gaye varo varo. There is a loophole in on Kapil Dev's third canto, the Jarayati Jagusam Nidyanalana Jata, that when proportion to their conscious surrender, that prarabdha karma can be dissolved when holy name sprout in the heart. But saying this is not that easy. It's not like a pure name just coming, anybody chanting. So there has to be constant endeavor and seeking for mercy, constant endeavor to get the mercy. That at one point it will dissolve.
One thing is that in the BT, Prabhupada translated Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu in his BTG back in the early 60s. And in the verse that you're citing, which is from Padma Purana,
yes,
Prabhupada said, because it's kramena iva, I think, which means gradually.
Yes.
Okay, but then Prabhupada says, it appears to be gradual, but actually, I think this is the analogy of the fan being unplugged. It actually takes place at once, but then the fan slows down gradually. So, in other words, the power is taken out, but it keeps spinning. And that's the kind of the trajectory that I understand is taking place. Now, you know, so, and that's, according to my understanding, it's directly under Krishna's control. One other point, that this point of the consciousness. I had a long discussion with Platananda Swami about that when he was just here. And it's not just that you sit in the fire sacrifice and you get a name and get your beads and you're free of karma. It's dependent upon the level of surrender. It's that when it's fully surrendered to the spiritual master, then it's gone. You know, you're not under the laws of karma anymore. So it's, and then you get in the fifth text of negative instruction, where Prabhupada cites the, I used to know it, but I don't anymore. Pran knows, I'm sure. But it describes the devotional service or initiation diksha as a process. And that it takes one from the platform of being materially contaminated, and it continues to the point of where one achieves bhava. So at some point in the process, there may be the full surrender where the karma is completely elaborated. And it's a bit controversial. I actually asked this question to Guru Prasad Swami when he was here giving class last time. So it's, but anyway, it's a different thing once we take up the process of devotional service. It's not, the prabdha karma may be dissipated to different degrees according to the level of surrender, as you're saying, but we're still getting some of that, you know, because we got this body. It's not like as soon as we take initiation, we got a brand new body. You know, there's like different frailties and different tendencies in the subtle body as well. Hare Krishna. Do you think, what's any, Kali Pani Prabhu?
Today's verse poses this problem that the grihasthas are preparing opulent foodstuffs and then enjoying them themselves, and that's a fall down. And the solution proposes that they open the door and invite sannyasis and brahmacharis to first eat. But you can't do that. You open your door, you get a lung full of carbon monoxide, and that's about it. So can you discuss the problem? I mean, what do you do?
Well, it strikes me, you know, that if one is offering the foodstuffs to Srila Prabhupada, the spiritual master, that's being done. You know, you're covering the bases. It's not boga anymore. Usually this Chandrayana is referred to as what you got to do to overcome eating onions and garlic and meat. And this is one reference from the Parashara Smriti, you know, about not offering it to the brahmacharis. And one of the problems that we're dealing with in ISKCON North America, there aren't so many brahmacharis around either, you know, so that's an issue, you know, in following that strictly. But, you know, from my understanding, this is more in the kind of the Karmakandya section, you know, this type of injunction, whereas the main thrust of our devotional service is, you know, Shravanam Kirtanam, Vishnu Smaranam. And these are like kind of details that weren't so much emphasized. Like, for instance, the Hari Bhakti Vilas that was compiled by Gopal Bhatta Goswami, Sanatana Goswami, you know, and there's a little controversy who actually wrote it all. They seemed like they worked together on it. But it was at a time when Smarta Brahmanism was very prominent in Vrindavan, so it was kind of bridge preaching. But, you know, that's you know, it's not something that Prabhupada emphasized so much. Like if you, there was one friend, he was a donor to the Mayapur Institute, and he would follow to a T all of the regulations about observing Ekadasi from Hari Bhakti Vilas. And my God, you know, he was like tied up in knots for 3 days. You know, he couldn't do anything. Just doing that, you know, but hey, you know, there's a lot of preaching, a lot of other kind of service that could be executed that's actually probably more pleasing to the Lord. So this is something that, you know, and Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, he didn't emphasize so much, and Prabhupada emphasized it even less, you know, this kind of like this strict adherence to all these regulations. His main thrust was that we preach, you know, that we chant Hare Krishna, we hear Bhagavatam, and we try to, you know, we function on a level of compassion, not a selfish, you know, envious platform. Really trying to help others, you know, come to Krishna consciousness. That seems to be the main thrust of Prabhupada's mission, at least my perspective, you know. Pangovinda Prabhu?
I was thinking, like, it's not really applicable to our Ishkan philosophers. The reason is, this is just one thing. The Prabhupada.
Microphone disappeared?
That
oh, it's all gone.
Bhaktivinoda Thakur, he was a Grihastha, but his renunciation is so exalted, it is far superior than so-called sannyasi like myself. He considered himself like an insignificant Bhaktivinoda Thakur who was a Grihastha. His dedication. So then he wrote, Prabhupada wrote the letter to Hamsudutta Prabhu at that time, that he mentioned the other devotees he should engage, and in the same letter he said, you all are, even though you are householder, but your dedication is as good as sannyasi, sometimes superior to sannyasi. So who is going to feed who? That's my question.
Okay.
The Nishkan is not really applicable that except. Because most of the time, you look at yourself when you're trying to
do it. Don't
look at me. Every day you are busy with the Krishna conscious service. You are as good as sannyasi or some extent better.
Not really. Anyway. Okay, we'll end on that. Better. Mahamaya. Okay, one thing. Mahamaya, go ahead. You gotta speak super loud because I'm half deaf. Doesn't work. It's out of battery.
Okay, well, what you were just saying, like how Prabhupada's thrust was in preaching and, you know, it just awakened this pet peeve I have about the calendar. Because in the Prabhupada's day, there was one calendar. Mayapur calendar, we followed it all over the world. And then somebody, won't mention names, had the brilliant idea that we should be more specific, that each location should do the calculations and follow what ended up to be a different day sometimes.
The Shunga Chaturthi in Mayapur today, on Monday.
We have had Janmashtami celebrations, and then the next day have a bunch of people show up thinking it's Janmashtami. And it's like the same point that the unity that we experience and the confusion that's result, it's all hindering the process of spreading Krishna consciousness just for this like smart Brahmanism type. Hmm. Same thing. It's like I know that it's come up to the GBC, and unfortunately they haven't changed it back to Prabhupada's method.
Hmm.
Even though it's proven to be a problem. Maybe you can make an appeal.
I can do something about it, yeah. I'm the Ishvara in these kind of things. You did a pretty good job. Maybe you should do it.
I would if I could.
No, you. Yeah, hit him up, Mahamaya. Let him. Give him your mercy.
Do you all agree with me?
Yeah, come to the workshop, and then you have plenty of facility to talk to him.
I'll
go to Srila Prabhupada.
Yeah. Yeah.